You're listening to Strong Runner Chick Radio, where our goal is to educate, empower, and connect female distance runners. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any platform of your choosing, or share it with someone who might find this episode helpful. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show. Special shout out to today's sponsor and the sponsor of this entire Health as a Foundation to Sports series, Athlete Blood Test. They provide individualized, athlete-specific blood analysis to discover your unique nutrition, training, and recovery needs. Join the thousands of enthusiasts, elites, and pros that have already used Athlete Blood Test to help reach their goals. Testing is easy. Simply go to athletebloodtest.com, choose your panel, and schedule an appointment at a conveniently located lab core. Whether you're running your first marathon or competing to win, we're cheering for you, and we can help you get there. Use code SRC15 for 15% off your first panel. All right. Hello, Strong Runner Chicks. Welcome back to another episode of Strong Runner Chick Radio. It's Megan on today, and I have Dr. Sarah Cheskeen, a doctor of physical therapy in Boulder, Colorado, joining us. She currently is associated or works with Boulder Sports Physiotherapy. And she practices in this private outpatient clinic, treating all types of sports-related orthopedic injuries. She has a passion for treating runners, climbers, and the outdoor adventurer, and uses a variety of manual therapy techniques, biomechanics, and movement education to help her patients get back to doing the activities they love for the rest of their lives. Sarah is a Wisconsin native who enjoys running with her dog, Sherman, hiking 14ers, road cycling, cooking, and scrolling TikTok in her downtime. Her greatest fun fact and top five accomplishment is her 2014 win at a Michael Jackson moonwalking competition. Don't you know? I love it, Sarah. Sarah wrote that bio and sent it on over with a fun face at the end. I wish I could just emulate or simulate that face. Just a happy, excited face, along with the don't you know in your, I'm sure, Midwestern voice. So welcome to the show, Sarah. Happy to have you.
Thanks so much, Megan. Thank you for having me. You let the bio sounded great. I didn't realize you're going to read the whole thing. That's so funny. But yeah, moonwalking competition.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Moonwalking. Cool. I'm curious too, if you moonwalk on TikTok too. Are you TikTok famous?
I haven't shown that to the TikTok world yet. maybe I should. I'm very modest and shy about my moonwalking.
Oh. Sounds like you're pretty skilled. So I love it. Good way to, you know, coming from a PT, I feel like we should all learn how to moonwalk. Injury prevention.
Right? Yeah. It's moving in all types.
There you go. Well, I'm really excited to kick it off, Sarah, because I feel like we have to meet eventually because you live out in Westminster, Boulder area, and I'm down in Golden. So new to Colorado, also from the Midwest, from Minnesota, or went to college there. So we're kind of rivals in a way, but I'm sure we could be friends too. I also just love that you have a passion for treating runners and climbers alike. I do both myself, and I know how prone to injury we can be, really honing in today for runners specifically, and how that can contribute to so many different things, you know, just like setbacks in running. But I want to get started just by learning a little bit more about you. Like, how did you get into this field? What is your background? And, you know, both personally and professionally, like athletics growing up, and how did that sort of lead you into this field?
Yeah, no, I love that question. That's a great question. I was maybe the like one type of classic story where I hated running growing up. Like, I grew up doing all the other sports. I played volleyball, I played softball, I played basketball, and until I wasn't tall enough to play basketball anymore. I'm 5'1". But loved those types of sports. And then in college, just kind of picked up running. A friend of mine was doing a 5K. It was one of those color runs. And I was like, oh, you know, what the heck? The guy I liked at the time was doing the run. So I was like, yeah, sure. And lo and behold, I ran 3 miles and never knew I could. And after that, I was like, huh, like how much more can I run? I don't know. I didn't know I could do this. And then just fell in love. I've done all sorts of distances, got into kind of longer stuff, have done some marathons, and then moved to Colorado, got into trail running. So of course you go to the 50K naturally.
Naturally. Yeah.
As you do. So I've just loved it. But as far as it turning into my profession, I'd always known I wanted to be, I was one of the like weird people that just kind of knew what they wanted to do right away. And just really loved the medical field. Like anatomy was always my favorite class. Being more of a sports person, I just knew I wanted to go into that route, and physical therapy really spoke to me in that sense. And then I just learned in physical therapy school how much you can do as a physical therapist. Like I've worked in hospitals, I've worked in spinal cord injury clinics, which is so, so cool. Even as it integrates with the sports medicine field, is really fantastic. And then in dealing with some of my own running injuries, and that sort of thing, I just knew I wanted to use all of my skills and knowledge to help runners specifically, since running is like the sport that has the most injuries. I just really, with my passion for running and wanting to help people kind of navigate that world, since it can be like a confusing and scary world, I knew that's where my heart kind of lied. And then I moved to Boulder and I was like, oh, well, this is the perfect place to do this.
Paradise.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yes, I'm just so, so like, yes, Colorado, and yes, DPT. I considered the path, but gosh, it's so, I just have so much admiration for DPTs, for the school you go through and how hard it can be to get into school even. And I think just the commitment to uncovering different parts of, you know, people's injuries and how those might be intertwined with even other things, lifestyle, you know, overtraining, underfueling. And I know we're going to get into some of that today. But I just love how that approach is for you and how multifaceted it can be. Yeah, I wanted to ask too, with your own kind of personal experience through running, is there maybe an injury, and totally okay if you haven't had a major one, but if you haven't had injury, maybe like how you've avoided that, or if you've had injury, what your experience was like, from that patient side of having an injury?
Yeah. I've had kind of my fair share, nothing major. I've been really lucky to not have anything major. And maybe that's because of what I know and what I do for a living. But my first running injury was when I was training for a marathon. And it was, and I see this now happen in my clinic all the time. And so I like love that I can relate to it. But it was 3 weeks before the race, I was feeling fine. And then I had knee pain, which ended up being like a patellofemoral classic runner's knee kind of thing. But I was devastated, and I couldn't even walk without pain. Like I couldn't go up and down the stairs. And I was like, screw this. I've like trained in Wisconsin. It was like the year of the polar vortex. No. I like trained through all this negative degree weather, and I was mad. That was the one that stuck in my head the most, because my first one, and it had so much emotion tied to it. And let me tell you, I feel like that's the one I see all the time. Especially like the few weeks leading up to a race and the few weeks after, as you start to taper, as niggles start to set in, things can happen. And, I think it's kind of the nature of being an active person. Like injury is okay. Injuries are going to happen. And you just have to kind of like have the tools and, you know, get through it in a way, and you can still get to that start line for sure.
And gosh, that must've been a bummer too. Just the timing of it all. So I know injuries can be in the worst times, right? Like before an important state meet or before you're, you know, a big marathon. And it's like, I've had all this training leading up to it. So I just wonder how much of that for you, like, was mental too, to like work through on like how to step back, or did you decide to go through with the marathon? Did you, you know, what did you do from there?
Yeah, no, good question. I was in my last year of my undergrad. It was right before I was going to PT school, and I was taking some kind of upper level courses at the time. And some of my professors were amazing. So I had kind of asked them about it because I was in some classes that were specific to like the biomechanics of running and all that kind of stuff. So they were really into it. And so luckily I just had access to all these great people who could give me some advice. And they showed me like the patella brace that you can wear. Mm-hmm. So I wore this like little brace for a little bit and did some like very specific exercises. And all of them had such great advice for me in that, you know what, it's 3 weeks before a race. Like if you barely ran for this 3 weeks just to heal your knee, you'll be fine. Like you'll get, you put in the hard work. Like there's really not more you can do from a fitness standpoint for this race. And you know what, even if you have to walk some of it, that's okay. Like you're still going to do this marathon and it's going to be all right. So I think that just having all of that support and hearing everyone else that had maybe been through it or had all that knowledge, was so, so helpful. And I was able to get to the start line and I did my marathon and the knee was fine.
Wow.
And then
that's
I did
great. That's awesome. I'm glad you were able to still complete it and, you know, recognize that like those 3 weeks before really aren't going to do a whole lot, you know, at that point. You had all the training behind you, right?
Right.
It's a good reminder. Right. Yeah. So when a runner comes to you and they are experiencing something like an injury, an ache pain, what's your process generally for kind of going about like figuring it out, especially maybe if it's like, oh, you know, my something or other hurts, but they don't really know what it is. I know some runners think like, oh, it's definitely this. It's definitely Achilles tendonitis. But, you know, when you're not quite sure where to start, like how do you begin to kind of unravel like where the injury might come from?
Yeah. That's a great question. I generally start with the same thing for almost everybody, but even though we all run, everyone's got a different story, especially with like what led to the injury. So I always ask if it's a new injury or if it's something that they've had before. Cause I think that's really important too. You know, and you start with specific questions about that area. So, you know, like how severe is the pain for you right now? Like, does it bother you all the time or just during running or during anything else? I always ask the question of, you know, besides running, like what else in your day, what other activities do you do? Do you maybe experience the same pain? Cause you know, those movement patterns can exist in various types of motions. And so if you think from a biomechanical standpoint, like, well, it hurts when they run and it also hurts when they go up and down stairs, you know, maybe it's their quad, like it just helps with kind of putting all the pieces together from the puzzle. And I love puzzles. So I think that's why I love this career so much.
It's like a puzzle.
Yeah. And you know what I've also found really valuable is asking, this is in my intake forms, but asking athletes about their entire injury history, even if it's not running related, like even if they're 35 now, and when they were 10 years old, they fell off a horse and I don't know, had some sort of injury. Like that stuff does matter. And I know it seems nuts for like 20 years later for something to still be in effect in your body. But, you know, if you didn't heal from it 100% or you started to compensate around that and years go by and repetitive injuries are like this, it's quite possible that led to some sort of different movement pattern that has now been dysfunctional for however long. So I find that really valuable. And then I really have wanted in my practice to make it this holistic approach, because of what I've experienced in the healthcare system. And, we learn so much more now in PT school, and is why you have to get your doctorate now, of just like screening for all sorts of things and really kind of having your doctor brain on a little bit. And so I always like to ask about nutrition. I ask about stress. I ask about sleep. Even if they've had blood work done, all of that stuff can manifest as injuries, even if, you know, there's really nothing biomechanically wrong. I always want to ask this question. So that sounds like a lot, but I've been lucky enough to have my own practice where I can spend an hour to 90 minutes with people, just because I find that conversation and those questions so important.
Yeah. Yeah. So valuable to consider all those pieces. I just see you lighting up over it. I love it. It's such a puzzle. I just went home for the holidays and I think we did too many puzzles. So I love them too, but sometimes they can be like, you know, you're like scratching your head of how can I figure this out? And I know even just among ourselves, it can be so hard to have that, sort of objective lens, which is I'm sure where you come in to be like, oh, like I can point out things that maybe someone couldn't really realize on, you know, on their own, from that PT perspective. Are there any things, I guess, from like a movement lens that you think runners should be able to do or that you kind of screen for, whether it's like calf raises or standing on one leg or basic things where you're like, okay, if you're a runner, let's try to get you to be able to do this, maybe from like the strength or injury prevention standpoint.
Yeah. I love that you said calf raises. I know you have a lot of amazing knowledge in this field also. So, calf raises, balancing on one leg with your eyes closed, especially for my trail runners, that proprioception is important, no matter what surface you run on, but especially, you know, on uneven surfaces. So, balancing one leg with your eyes closed, which is crazy difficult for most people. People are surprised when they can't do it. No matter how old you are. I also, I like to watch people, squat, kind of a lot of functional movements. You know, how are they squatting? Are they, squatting their weight evenly? Are they favoring one side? What's happening in their upper body when they do that? Because I think as runners, we forget how important our upper body is, you know, both from posture and from a coordination standpoint, and things like that. I always look at a one-legged bridge. So a bridge
those
position.
Those are tough. Yeah.
Those are tough. Those are
surprisingly.
So tough.
Yeah. You look and you're like, oh, that's so easy. And then, yeah, I always love how people are shocked. It's like, oh
I
my
know.
Gosh.
And I feel bad too. Well, I shouldn't say I feel bad, but it's funny going to a physical therapist because I think most people think they're going to come in and the physical therapist tells them everything that they're doing that's wrong. Like you do a one-legged bridge, uh-huh. You're like, yeah, okay, you think that's easy, but like your hips dropping on this side, you're compensating like this. Mm-hmm. I can see you're doing this. And let me tell you, if I got on the table, I would do my best, but I'm sure I compensate in ways too.
Yeah, we all have.
But that's the part of those tests that I really love is, you know, watching people move, how do they compensate, and then reteaching them how to correctly move. Mm-hmm. And I tell my patients and my runners all the time, like, you are strong. You have such amazing strength in you. Like, you run for miles. Obviously, you're strong. But we just have to find that strength and mm-hmm. teach you how to, you know, activate it and support it correctly. And I know you have it in you, but if you just think about a bridge and before you even lift your hips up in the air, like, engage your core, squeeze your butt cheeks, mm-hmm. you know, then do it. It can feel way different and you feel like it's way easier, which
oh
is
my gosh.
An so education good. Piece I love.
Yeah. 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 I love it. One more question on that as anyone's listening and they're like, yeah, I know my PT might've given me bridges, but I'm not doing them. Right. So a lot of runners I hear come in or even athletes I coach and they're like, yeah, so that was a PT exercise. I should have done it, but I stopped doing it. And so do you have any tips for that? I know for runners, like sometimes strength is just one extra thing, but especially for these little tiny things, right? Or seemingly tiny, whether it's body weight exercises or warm-ups or whatever it is you're giving them, clamshells or bridges, but how do you, how do you get yourself to do them or get clients to do them consistently or, you know, not to forget about them?
Yeah. Well, one thing I say to people and I say to myself too, is, not to call them PT exercises, which I used to do a lot, but, I'm like, no, like these are your exercises or this is part of your running. This is part of your training. Like it's no longer PT exercises. It seems that like that at first, because you're in this process for injury rehab, but really it's it's specific to you and what you should do for the rest of your life. If you want to run for the rest of your life, which most people do. So I'm like, no, these are exercises, not just specifically your PT exercises. And then for myself, you know, I get the question a lot of when should I do these? Like, when is the best time for me to do these exercises? And this is maybe a cop-out answer, but I always say whenever you want to do them, you know, like if I told you to do them in the morning and you're not a morning person, you're never going to do them.
Yeah.
So that's silly. So that's usually my first answer is, you know what, whenever it works for you, like if you're a full-time, you have a full-time job, you have three kids, maybe do it at night when you're watching TV with them, when you're scrolling on TikTok for half an hour, maybe in a great position.
I even have done them while cooking dinner, like put a band around my knees or ankles, do a few monster band walks around the kitchen. I mean, it's like, yeah, whenever you remember, cause you're waiting there, you're like cooking something and you got a little time. Yeah.
Totally. That's a great idea. I know some people do them while they brush their teeth. They'll stand on one leg and they'll brush their teeth.
That's a good way to remember too. Cause it's like you do that, you know, twice a day consistently kind of thing. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. Cool. And it's tied with some sort of activity. Yeah. I like to tell most people pick a couple and we'll find like the 3 to 5 things that work for that person. And do it right before you run. Like most of us need to do a dynamic warm-up anyway. If now your warm-up feels like it has a purpose, you get these exercises in, you don't have to think about it for the rest of the day. I know sometimes we're trying to squeeze in a run, but I think saving time, if it's only 5 minutes before your run to do these exercises, and maybe cutting, you know, the total run like 5 minutes short than what you were going to do is going to behoove you in the long run than trying to squeeze out an extra 5 minutes of a repetitive motion.
More running.
Yeah, exactly.
Love the advice. Good stuff. Good stuff. I know I hear a lot of running coaches these days say, well, if you want to be a better runner, just run more. And it's like, oh, but you're forgetting like this missing piece. It's so essential. So I like that advice a lot.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. And I love how much, especially on this podcast, Megan, I know you talk about it a lot, the importance of strength training. And I really feel like the running community is finally starting to find the importance of it and kind of shift like, okay, I need to do this. This needs to be a part of my running and, you know, all of that. And I think the wheels are turning now and that shift is starting to happen, which is so awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for being a part of the conversation. And one more thing on strength too. I just almost like that. I don't necessarily know that people should do strength certain things when they're injured, but I like that it's sort of this other thing where if running isn't like, you can't run 365 days a year, 10 miles a day, you know, that kind of gets old. Like you have to have those downtimes or those different seasons. And so it's cool to see people start to enjoy it and actually want to like strength train or looking forward to that. And not just running, or it sounds like you work with climbers too. So kind of having that different sports, different hobbies that you're into.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So one of our big topics for today, because I know we could talk about just every injury in the playbook, and I know we'll get there. Like I want to ask you what your common ones you see are, but I know that we talked a little bit about, we haven't talked about orthopedic injuries, so we could highlight those a little, but one that I wanted to hone in on was stress fractures. What can lead to stress fractures, where you commonly see them in the body for runners, and how a runner might, well, let's just start there. Like what are, you know, with stress fractures, big topic there, but maybe most common areas that you're seeing in the body with runners and maybe most common sort of like leading up to the event signs to look out for.
Yeah. And can I tell you, I love stress fractures. That sounds terrible. I love treating. Helping people navigate them. For runners specifically, I see the most stress fractures happen in the foot, which kind of makes sense. It's the part of the body that hits the ground first, you know, gets the most stress from the ground. So I see a lot, what they call metatarsal stress fractures is a really common one. So all those bones, those little bones in between your feet.
I was convinced I had one after my first 50. I didn't, thankfully, but it was a strain. So I just I'm like, yes, I know. Could have been. Yeah.
Well, and that's what's tough too is it's an alarming thing. It's a scary, pain or sensation. And the feet, especially after a 50K or any sort of race, they're just sore and hurt anyway. And so sometimes that this is lasting longer than I think. What is this? I've totally seen that a lot. Other places I've seen stress fractures too are tibias. So the shin area, I've seen that quite a bit. I've seen hip stress fractures specifically, in the pelvis, and then in the femoral neck.
I've even seen broken tailbones or heard of friends having those from running.
Yeah. And really a lot of, stress fractures too. A lot of people will ask the question about stress reaction versus stress fracture. Cause that's a really common thing too. And, stress reaction is kind of what it sounds like. It's this reaction on the bone level that there's inflammation happening, usually due to stress from repetitive motion. But it's okay. And it can be from sometimes a muscle being overused that's kind of pulling on the bone and creating this inflammatory response. And so where bones attach, maybe at the shin or at the pelvis or the tailbone, is why those can kind of happen in those areas too.
Obviously, tearing a ligament or a tendon or muscle is one thing. I'm just always looking at my dog because he's so cute. I'm sure you have a dog too. You're like, but I really want to hone in on bones, the importance of how can we as runners, because you often hear of bone mineral density as female runners, how can we take care of those bones before it becomes a reaction or fracture?
Well, to kind of tie all topics together, strength training is such a good way to maintain bone health. But in general too, I think runners, or anyone that likes to run, anyone that wants to engage in running as an activity, should take it seriously. It's a serious sport. It's the sport that leads to the most injuries of any sport. So, getting blood work done, I use, the Inside Tracker and I've gotten my blood work done and, being aware of, depleted minerals and vitamins that maybe you can't feel or aren't aware of. And a lot of those are vitamin D, iron, those can lead to low bone mineral density. Hormones, both for men and for women, can affect our bone health. And so I think kind of engaging in this preventative idea, getting your blood work done once a year, making sure you're taking all the right supplements, talking to a nutritionist, that is so important, especially maybe at the beginning of a training cycle or before you're even going to start the sport, just really understand how nutrition plays into it. Cause I know with stress fractures, there's a lot of talk about red S syndrome, and how that is something that usually leads to stress fractures or can lead to stress fractures. And so to really take care of your bone health, I think it has to be from all aspects, of things, and especially for runners and active people.
Yeah, that's really good. Just words of wisdom all around to take care of the big picture. Yeah. I love it. And none of that had to do with I thought you might say something about shoes, because that was kind of my pinpoint, was my shoes were the reason. But a lot of that is taking care of the whole picture, before that happens too.
Yeah. I love that you bring up shoes though. It's definitely one of the factors. And I think always having good supportive shoes for you and not letting a shoe get too old to where it's just not supporting your foot anymore. That's such a good point. It's totally part of the equation.
Or there's this big push for zero drop and just shifting from 8 millimeter to zero drop, which is a bit drastic and maybe something I've done in the past. So good mistake there. Yeah.
No judgment. We all do it.
Yeah. I also wondered what role surfaces play. Obviously, I'm a big trail runner advocate, but I do train for road races too. And I always notice, like, for me personally, roads are so hard on my body and my joints. It just feels like I take a lot longer to recover. Mm-hmm. But I've heard the same for like downhill trail running, right? Or really rocky terrain. Do you notice a pattern with runners you're seeing, and whether they're trail, road, ultra, or is it pretty much like not unique to any one area?
That's a great question. It's funny, maybe because I practice in such a bubble that I see kind of an equal split. I see it in road runners as much as I see it in trail runners. And I think that speaks to how multifaceted stress fractures are. Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely can be a surface thing. Obviously with pavement and cement, that's a lot more force, and in a different way through your bones. And so I think it can lead to an injury like this a little quicker than running on a surface that's a little bit more forgiving. And trails can be that way, or like a gravel or like turf kind of stuff. Yeah. That's a little bit more forgiving. So I would agree with that. But as far as what I see in my clinic, I feel like I see it across yeah, the board, really.
Across the board. And I know you're pretty passionate too about just looking at the whole, like we said, looking at the whole picture, but a lot of what comes up with that sometimes is like under fueling or overdoing it in certain areas of life, especially for women. So do you see any like correlation to red S, or, you know, how do you look at that whole picture and encourage someone to maybe see a nutritionist or get the help they need in another area?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you make that connection too, and talk about it. I found it so important to talk about, especially as I myself have had red S. I've struggled with nutrition and kind of disordered eating and as it relates to injuries. And so I've done a lot of reading around it, and I love that talk is happening. And when I bring it up in my practice, it's funny, I try to screen for it the best I can. And I'm actually reading this amazing book by Kate Bennett. I have it right here actually. It's treating athletes with eating disorders, but it's not specific to that. It goes kind of around all the things, and red S specifically in this book, and different screening things you can do. I think runners, as we tend to be type A and perfectionists, kind of struggle with a lot of the same things. And however it manifests is different for everybody, but we kind of all struggle with some of these things. But yeah, with red S, I usually don't bring it up at first, mostly because I think in the physical therapy profession, patients don't expect that in their visit. Yeah. And so there's a little bit of like, well, I don't want to talk about this here. Like, this, why are you asking me that? Like, this doesn't make sense. And so I usually, as I try to navigate that, you know, start with, okay, the biomechanics of the injury, like, that makes sense to most people. That's also going on. So let's start there. And usually when you can fix that, you can start to have somebody feel better. And that's always my goal, is I want someone to feel better the first day they come in, when they leave, like whether that's they have less pain or they're moving better, whatever it is, I just want them to feel better. So I start there. But of course these are repetitive injuries, so they take more than one visit. I like to think I'm that good, but I'm not that good. It takes more than one visit. That's usually the conversation I start to have in visit like two or three, especially too, as the stress fracture causes somebody to not be able to run. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much emotion around that. And I totally understand that. Like, you lose your identity. You can't run with your friends anymore. So you kind of lose a social avenue in a way. And that's sometimes when some of those things that lead to red S, like nutrition deficiencies or disordered eating patterns or all that, start to manifest under that stress. So it can be kind of a nice segue into talking about those things, like, well, how is your nutrition going? Are you seeing a nutritionist? Or how is your sleep? Is it affecting your sleep at all? Because that's going to cause this injury to take longer to heal also. Yeah. That's kind of how I try to start to talk about it anyway.
Yeah. I think that's awesome that you're having those conversations. I mean, it's certainly not easy, and similar in the coaching realm too. I think sometimes those things are it's just hard to discuss, you know, how fueling's going or how sleep is or stress at work even. It's like, why are you asking me about these things? It's like, well, that does influence a lot more than, you know, just that area of life, right? It's like so multifaceted in the body and such. I also wanted to know, for anyone listening, and I mean, even for us, just to know, like, what are the potential, I guess, bone consequences related to something like red S? Like, are you seeing that theoretically, or also like the research points to, right? Like, kind of like, if we're under fueling as runners, what might happen as a result, like with osteopenia or porosis?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. There's a lot of research looking at that and kind of the long-term effects for men and for women. And I'm so glad that they're, you know, incorporating everybody in this conversation, because it was such a female dominated topic for such a long time. But as far as just as it relates to bone, you know, they are seeing it lead to osteopenia and osteoporosis. And actually, as it's defined, they usually don't use the word osteopenia until you're over 50 years old. So if you're younger than 50, they're going to say osteoposporosis, depending on your DEXA scan.
Wow. Okay.
Usually they'll say it's osteoporosis. And, you know, if you're young enough and you can work on it now, I think, you can either, you know, prolong or negate some of the long-term, you know, risks that can happen. But I do think it should be taken seriously, because it, you know, especially for women, when they enter, if they spend some time now in osteoporosis and then you go through menopause, and then osteoporosis becomes even more frequent after that, it can get to the point where, you know, that bone health isn't there at, you know, maybe say 60, which is still so young. Like, there's people in Boulder running at 80 years old, and I know everybody wants to be that 80-year-old. I do, for sure. Uh-huh. And so if we don't, you know, take that seriously now, it can lead to, you know, falls at that age that end up breaking a bone when otherwise it wouldn't have, if we maintained a healthy bone mineral density as long as possible. So
that's pretty major. It sounds like something to take care of early in life too, as much as you can.
Yeah. As you get older, I also never let anybody in my office.
Never
say
too
that.
Late.
Like, yeah, it's too late, or they're too
no,
old.
No, never too late.
Yeah. I'm like, nope. No.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's more for those that are young listeners that might be in college or high school that are thinking, oh, well, it won't affect me. It's like, oh, but it will, like, you know, all of this, everything you're doing now will affect you in some way later in life, right? Like, you want to make sure you're preventing as much as possible.
Yeah. And I think, what I've seen happen too is kind of that chronic cycle of, you know, maybe it is a stress fracture. And if it was from something like red S or, you know, a nutritional deficiency, and that part isn't addressed, you know, the injury's healed and the strength has come back and this person goes back to their sport. But if all those other things weren't addressed, then 6 months later, another stress fracture happens, and sometimes in the same spot. And that gets concerning too. And I think for the now and for the young listeners, that just means time away, like more time away, which none of us want, especially for prolonged periods of time or multiple periods of time at an age and at a time in our lives when we can be the most active and perform at our best. Like, we don't want to rest now, which I totally understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Easier said than done, I guess. Sure. I'm curious for those other activities. So for anyone that's listening that might be off running, whether they're injured or they're just off in the off season, kind of looking to take some time away from the sport, what do you advise? Or maybe there's someone that's like, I can't wait to run again, but I have a stress fracture. Like, what would you advise in general, if you're not running, to quote unquote, like, runners don't want to lose their fitness, or they want to feel like they're progressing in some way? Obviously my advice too would be to enjoy yourself outside of running and all that, like more family, more friend time and such. But in terms of like physical things that they can still do to support their overall, you know, health, well-being, what would you recommend?
Yeah, I am such a proponent for, there's always something you can do. Because movement in and of itself is so beneficial, not only for our bodies, but for our mental health, just for so many things. And so there's always something you can do. And that does change a little bit depending on where the injury may be, that you have to be a little bit careful with. But I sometimes say swimming, although I know most runners are like, don't ever tell me to swim. I'm not getting in the pool. I'm not aqua jogging. Give me something else. I think what I've said this to a couple patients and I want to start saying it more. It's almost something to think about when you're training or when you're running before you even get injured. That, like, another preventative thing is to like start a jar of ideas. And it's just ideas of things you want to try, you know, like maybe if an injury happens during your training cycle, you have things in this jar and you can pull out, and it's things you've always wanted to try, like a yoga class, or I always wanted to try aerial yoga and I've never done that.
Oh yeah.
I'm not going to do it now, but I'll save it maybe if I'm injured or like down the road.
Injury box. That's kind of almost fun. It makes it a little better. Yeah.
Or like a cooking class or other things or books you haven't had time to read that you want to read. I do though suggest like some sort of movement. Again, for that like psychology piece, I know when I am maybe having a niggle or something's kind of bothering me, that's the part that usually triggers some sort of stress response in me. And for a lot of runners, when we're stressed, and I'm not sure if this is always a good thing, but running is our stress reliever, or that's our first go-to.
Yeah.
So it's almost finding those other ways to relieve stress before stuff like this happens. Like, whether maybe that is yoga or climbing or, indoor cycling. Something.
Kayaking. I don't know. I'm just kayaking. Thinking of anything that doesn't involve for those people that have the poor foot or like lower limb injuries, which is most runners. Like, what can you still do? I know some runners too aren't even able to bike at times, which is like, oh gosh, like for the bikers out there, that's hard too. But
yeah. And usually though, that's temporary. And I try to remind my patients, you know, if it is the foot and it's hard to tell, like maybe your doctor put you in a boot, so you have to wear the boot. Everyone dreads the boot. And I kind of have a love hate relationship with the boot. So it's hard to bike or whatever. It may be a time, I think injuries are learning experiences for people, and, they're a good thing. It's kind of our body's way of telling us like, hey, you need to slow down. Like, you need to address some things going on right now that you're not addressing per se. And so maybe you can't tolerate biking or you can't tolerate really much activity because of the injury for the first week or two. But it's a hard time, but it might be a good time to just kind of reflect on how training's going. What should I be doing differently? What should I be talking to my coach about? What other things in life that are going on, like maybe stress in life, and stress can lead to an injury too. Like if work has been crazy, COVID, like life of quarantine and COVID.
All intertwined. I thought of another one you could add to the injury bucket, the moonwalk. I don't know, water bound. You can't actually.
I guess that would be tricky in a pool, but give it a try.
Yeah.
I'm saying you can't.
Who knows? I'm just imagining some things that coaches would be like, oh my gosh, no, if somebody put down like ice skating, rollerblading, it's like, maybe not skiing black diamonds. I just remember not being able to do those in college, and it's like freedom.
Yeah.
Do more of that now. Maybe before you get injured, that's like more preventive too. It's good ankle work, I feel like. Anyway, so we're actually getting to the end of like our main entree for this, this episode. I wanted to see, are there any other things you think are important or maybe not talked about enough when it comes to runners and injuries or runners you're seeing?
I feel like we've talked a lot about a lot of good ones. Like, again, I think especially for kind of the recreational runner, which I would say most of us maybe categorize ourselves as that, versus elite, is that, you know, whether you're currently running 5 miles a week or you're currently running 70, like you have to treat yourself like that elite runner. Like you have to look at your nutrition, you know, go see a nutritionist. You have to, you know, buy the good shoes. You have to make time for body work. Oh my gosh. And I'm included in this. I'm bad at it.
Me too.
The massage therapist I work with, her name is Kate. She's fantastic. And I know she would say this about me. I'm bad at it, but, I think it's because sometimes we don't think we're good enough or we don't think we're enough, like just that word, to engage in some of these things. And it's, you know, you are, and you, your body needs it just as much as that elite person. And so I think treating ourselves better, we punish our bodies a lot with running, right? Like we suffer through hard workouts, we're pounding our body through the ground step by step by step for minutes and hours every week. But we don't do a good job of taking care of it. And that includes all the extraneous things, eating, sleep, getting a massage, getting a pedicure. Ooh, runners get a pedicure. Yeah.
Just something nice for your feet.
Yeah. Boys too. Like, the massage is great. So I guess that's what I would say. And maybe I'm surrounded a lot by that in Boulder. I know I have it myself of, you know, being a runner and navigating that imposter syndrome and just not thinking that what you're doing is enough. So you don't have to take care of yourself that way, but it's so important no matter who you are. Even if you're, I don't want to say just, cause it's not just, but if you're a walk runner, that's fantastic. You're still putting your body through a lot of stress. So I think that would be one of the things I would say to people.
I love that. You are enough. That's so important. Right. And I see that even with runners thinking, oh, like they're not enough to hire a coach or a nutritionist or go see a PT. Like you are enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And doing all those things right away, like not waiting until injury comes on.
Or there's something
wrong. Like you, it's almost, it's so funny. I read this book and there was a quote in this book that really spoke to me. And I say it a lot to my patients now, but running is one of the only sports, if you look at just every sport that exists, one of the only sports where people don't start with fundamentals. Like we want to get into running. So we go buy a pair of shoes and we just run. I think a lot of people did that during the pandemic, actually.
Yeah. There's no like prep work on how to do it.
There's no prep work, right? Like you don't find a coach. You don't learn. Most people who play basketball have to learn how to dribble. They have to learn how to do all the things before they play a game. They don't just play games. Doing all of that right away. Maybe you go see, I do a lot of gait analysis with patients too. So like having your gait analysis looked at, and that can be really helpful right away so that you can learn about like cadence. You can learn about posture, what running is supposed to feel like. Again, it's like all those fundamentals that no one talks about, but like you can't play a basketball game until you learn how to dribble. It should be the same for runners.
Yeah. So foundational.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I love that. That's a good quote. Thanks. To think about.
Yeah. I can't remember what book it was.
People are like this. I'm just thinking, I'm like, oh, people, like having worked in like healthcare, it's like, we're like that with the doctor too. We're terrible about going in for preventive care and the annual screenings. And then it's like, oh gosh, there's something wrong. What is it? You know, then you want to go in to see your doctor and you're like, I don't even have a doctor because I haven't been going. So yes, go see your doctors, go see your PTs. I know. All that stuff. So I'm wanting you to, I guess, as we reflect back, like I would love to learn a little bit about what advice you would give, like thinking about your own self and, you know, whether it's your younger self or your early runner self, any advice that you would give?
To like my early runner self. I love that. This is maybe really cheesy, but I almost wouldn't. Like, I really appreciate all the things I've learned from all the mistakes that I've made. Especially even as it relates to what I went through with my eating disorder and Red S and all of those things. Like I've learned so much from all of those, and I appreciate so many things. Like even in going through some of that recovery, like I've appreciated more downtime and rest time. Mm-hmm. And I think rest or time off has an unfortunate stigma, in the running community. Yeah. But, and some of this comes from my education too, and being in my profession, but you know, your body, the physiological processes, and I'm such a science person. So those yeah. things usually like make my brain uh-huh. feel calmer. But those physiological processes happen when we're resting. Like that's why humans sleep, right? Like when we sleep, all those things are rejuvenating, all those things are replenishing, and all those things, the same happens with sport and activity. Like you have to have a rest day, sometimes two, maybe three, and that like, right? Like that's okay. Yeah. And balance is such a thing. And when you're not running, you're still a runner, however that means for you. Mm-hmm. And so I think telling myself maybe not so much about the mistakes that I made and not making those same things, but just remembering that I love this sport and I want to do it for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Like, how do we start longevity now? And if that means taking two rest days a week, great. I'll see you on Mount Sanitas when I'm 80 years old.
Oh, I love that. Yes. I, you know, with all these like terrible news headlines about college coaches, like weighing runners and pushing them down bad paths, I really like this quote. I don't remember which coach started this, but what if our coaches were measured, like their success as a coach was not measured by the number of titles that a team won or a person won, but it was, or an athlete, right, during their career, but it was like how long after their career did they continue? And I think that's so important to consider just in the longevity approach, because I know too many runners that got burnout in high school or college or their 20s and they don't want to run anymore because of it. So yeah, I love that you're like focused on your 80-year-old self and kind of like the 80-year-old, like what would she tell you, you know, that kind of advice. I think we could all use that too. So,
yeah. No, I love that you said that. That's such a good quote. And thinking about longevity. And I think we think those things about a lot of even just inanimate objects or materials, like our cars. Like we want all of the yeah. nice things we have to last as long as possible. And we should feel that way about our body. And we don't always yeah. do that.
There's that body car machine analogy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. I say that a lot to yeah. patients, or like, go get a tune-up, whether that's from your PT, whether that's from your chiropractor.
Yeah, get the signature oil.
Yeah, I'll take maintenance A and rotate my tires, please. Thank you.
Yeah. And if you have that check engine light coming on, that's like, get in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, or don't wait for it to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, good stuff. We could turn this into a whole like analogy thing. All right, so I did want to know any... just for fun, like anything else other than the Michael Jackson moonwalk. It sounds like you have a dog that you love, but favorite, well, how about this first? Favorite things about Boulder?
Ooh, about Boulder, Colorado?
Yeah.
Man, I'm still in such a honeymoon phase living here.
How long have you lived there?
I've lived in Colorado for almost five years now.
5 years, and the honeymoon phase is still strong.
I know. I have the, I'm very fortunate to be able to drive into Boulder for work. And so there's this
still magical.
Magical when you like get over the hill.
Oh, I know. Coming from, spot too, Golden. It's like down 93 up and over. Yeah. So pretty.
And so I feel like I have to say, not that I have to say, but I will say the trails. I just love how accessible the mountains are, and not even just for running. I've had my best friends come visit me, and who still live in Wisconsin. And just, you know, if you've had a hard day at work, or you just need a little escape, like to go to the mountains, whatever that means. If you go for a run, or you just want to go for a hike, or you just want to like sit at Chautauqua and stare at them because they're so pretty. You can do that. And that's so cool. I love the like community of Boulder, and maybe that's because I'm in the running community, which I think has this beautiful accepting spirit. Everyone is so nice. We've been able to make the best group of friends, my husband and I, when I say we, the best group of friends from the running community. And even in my profession, I've met some just amazing people that are so nice and so welcoming. I've really appreciated that about Boulder. And those are some of the,
you're selling me on it.
Oh man, it's so good. And the sunshine, the mild winters, I should say, from a Wisconsinite, like the mild winters and sunshine all the time. Man.
Love it. Yeah. Good love things. It. Good things. And so aside from, it sounds like you like puzzles, but anything else that you like to do, like what makes you thrive is our Kelsey's favorite question, my co-host, in terms of life outside of running, like, what do you love to do?
Yes. And I love that you guys asked that question. I love that you guys asked that question. What makes me thrive outside of running, are a lot of things. I love people. I think I'm an extrovert in that way. So I love, like seeing my friends or just even going somewhere and meeting a bunch of new random people, which has been hard in the past couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're all experiencing that.
Feeling that. I'm an introvert that loves that too.
Yeah.
It's just hard. Yeah.
But I also love music. I've missed that part. I used to play the saxophone. Fun fact about me, alto and tenor. Yep. So I miss music. I really thrive in playing music, listening to music, all of those types of things. Cooking. I have a huge Italian family. Ooh. And so growing up as a woman in an Italian family, you run when you're stressed, but you cook when you're stressed also.
Yeah, that goes well. Hand in hand, like Italian dinners, pre-race, you know,
pasta dinners before race.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. Any favorite dishes Italian to make?
Ooh, ravioli, which I haven't perfected. Oh. That's actually like our family's Christmas tradition.
Oh boy.
Homemade ravioli.
And I made them last year.
Oh, I know. They're not easy.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing. I love hearing what makes people, you know, light up outside of the sport too.
Yeah.
Lastly, I want to know, what does being a strong runner chick mean to you?
Can I tell you, I've been thinking about that question.
Oh yeah.
Cause I love that question. And, I think, you know, I've tried to also listen to all of the other amazing women you've had on this podcast and how they define it. And there's so many great responses to this question. I think for me, and maybe this is repetitive to what we've said already today, but I almost think about it in a way that being a strong runner chick is more for me being a strong chick who runs. Strong runner chick is a much sexier name, so I'm glad you guys went with that. but yeah, it's being a strong woman, as I identify myself. And running is a part of that. And I think that's helpful for me and maybe for runners out there, because, you know, when running gets taken away from us by an injury, we don't want to be defined by it.
Yeah.
Because then that's where that like loss of identity is. But
for
me, I'm a strong chick in all the senses, and I'm a strong chick who likes to run just as much as I like to climb and I like to cook and I like to do all these things. But I also super like to run.
Oh, yes. I love the definition. Thank you. We might need a name change. Might not be as catchy.
Not as catchy.
Part of it's the catchiness, but yes, strong chick who runs. Or as I like to think about it too, like in how you said so beautifully earlier, like even if you don't run, you know, and I think about it, like even if you don't run 40 miles a week or 70 or 80 or whatever you're looking at and comparing yourself to as this like benchmark standard, even if you run 5 miles a week, like once a week, twice a week, like you can still be a runner, you know, if you want to identify as such or as someone who runs. But I also like the idea of not getting wrapped up or intertwined in that. It's just, it's interesting. Like I think I consider myself a runner, even if I didn't, like if I was not allowed to run for a year, I'd still identify that way, but it's more like being a, maybe like a partner in the sport or something, or a supporter. I don't know. I've liked to see how people embrace that, I guess, over the lifespan and just looking at, you know, anyway, I'm not going to go on a rant.
No, I agree with you, though. I think that identity is good too. Like it's what makes our community so, it's what makes this community so strong. I think it may be because I'm in it. I'm not in the other sport communities, but I just, this community is so beautiful. It's so strong. It's so supportive. And so you want to identify with that. Who does it? But I think for me, because of maybe what I've struggled with in the past, I want to remember all the other things about me that I also really like.
I love it.
But yeah, I'm a strong chick who also identifies as a runner, and I love to run.
Thank you so much for being on the show, for putting thought into your questions. And
thank you for having me. Megan. This is so great. And thank you for creating this community and this podcast. It's been helpful for me, and I know it's helpful for a lot of women.
Well, good. I hope we can, we should collaborate on something in the future, like an event or make something happen here. So I love what you're doing. I want to give you guys a shout out too at, you said PR Labs had hosted an event recently with Inside Tracker and just, the whole community, like in Boulder, there's a lot going on. So anything upcoming or, maybe best ways for listeners to connect with you, especially if they're in the Boulder area and want to, you know, work with you?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Well, specifically to the events at PR Labs. So PR Labs stands for Performance and Recovery Labs. They have an Instagram, they have a Facebook, you can follow them or follow us, I should say. It's this wonderful sports medicine co-op of chiropractors and massage therapists and myself and personal trainers. We have more events with Inside Tracker. We're going to try to do one running event a month with them and have different people speak and food by Rad Foods by Kelly.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh, I could eat that food all day, every day. She is amazing. You can follow them. You can follow us on Instagram at PR Labs and see our events. I also have my own Instagram. It's Boulder Sports Physio. And you can follow me on there. I like to put both educational videos and like stupid funny ones because who doesn't?
Yeah,
so gotta follow me on there. You can, you know, find me. You can, I always tell people, like, of course, boundaries on weekends and after hours, but never hesitate to like send me a message, send me an email, ask me questions. I love kind of being that resource and being available for people, especially in the running community. So never hesitate to reach out.
Aww. Well, thanks, Sarah. Yeah, I'd encourage anyone listening, if you have any, you know, doubts about any sort of like injury, aches, pains, feel free to reach out to Sarah and definitely see how you can work with her. Fly out to town, come out to Boulder. We'll do a custom retreat. That would be super fun. But yeah, anyway, hope to see you at a PR Labs event. So thanks so much.
Megan, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Strong Runner Chicks Radio. Do us a favor and leave a review in iTunes to help spread awareness and foster the SRC community. Additionally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Strong Run Chicks.